on WNYC. My guest now is novelist and MacArthur Fellow, among other things, Paul Marshall. Her memoir, Triangular Road, has just been published, and in it she recounts her Brooklyn childhood, her Caribbean heritage, and her friendship with Langston Hughes, among other things. Her debut novel, Brown Girl, Brownstones, is also celebrating its 50th anniversary. Brown Girl, Brownstones, and Barbie, you know, turns 50 today.
Oh, dear. Well, the company we keep.
Indeed. And many people consider that work, if you don't know the book, to be the beginning of contemporary African-American women's writings. Paul Marshall, thanks for coming back on WNYC.
Hello. Thank you.
You're known to some people in our audience, not known to others. Where in Brooklyn did you grow up?
I grew up in Bed-Stuy, which was called Bedford when I moved there, and Stuyvesant. They only combined the two, and it became Bed-Stuyvesant.
And you write of your childhood, the quote, the tight, insular, little world of, is it Bajan, Brooklyn?
Bajan, B-A-J-A-N.
Which is what? Is that a neighborhood also?
Well, that is a neighborhood that was appropriated by the West Indians, especially those from Barbados, when they came to the United States in the early 20s. They started out in Red Hook, which we all know, right?
Indeed.
Red Hook. And then as their prospects sort of improved some, they saw those wonderful brownstone houses in Stuyvesant and Bedford, as it was called then. And they slowly but surely worked hard, saved hard, and were able to buy one after another the brownstone houses in that section of Brooklyn.
So the provocative quote here is, the tight, insular little world of Bajan, Brooklyn, took pride in the stereotypes attributed to it.
Absolutely.
The stereotypes?
Mm-hmm. The stereotypes, yes, that they were very progressive in terms of owning property, keeping up the property very well, and with but then, unfortunately, because the mortgages were so high and they were just a people who had newly arrived, they had to start renting out portions of these brownstone houses to others. And that is when the deterioration began. But then the owners moved out to Long Island. There was a whole drift.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Scotch-Irish had been there initially. They then were able to move out to Long Island. Then the Bajans came in, and they too.
Suburban flight. I take it there was a kind of Caribbean pecking order in the Bed-Stuy of your childhood?
A pecking order? In the sense of?
In the sense of maybe certain groups over others or some kind of class system?
Well, the Bajans, those from the little tiny island of Barbados, were fiercely ambitious people. And they were the ones who began first sort of purchasing the brownstone houses and renovating them and renting out portions of them and so on. So they were there initially. But people from all over the Caribbean began, from the other islands in the West Indies, also purchased houses.
You write about your politicization in the 60s.
Mm-hmm.
What do you remember as some formative political experiences or awakenings?
Well, it was fashionable in those days to belong to the AYD. This is the Youth for Democracy, for the Communist Party sort of...
youth group.
Yes. And so for a while, because it was fashionable, I was a member of the AYD, but there was also the civil rights organizations that were beginning to form then as we moved into the whole era of the civil rights movement. And at that point, I became a member of a number of the civil rights organizations. One that comes to mind, let's see, people like Jimmy Baldwin and Harry Belafonte, people like that involved in these organizations.
And one interesting thing that jumped out at me, in 1965, you were chosen by the State Department to accompany Langston Hughes on a European cultural tour. And yet by that point, You were known as a political activist. You had an FBI file. Why do you think the government picked you?
And that was the astonishing thing for me. When they called me down to Washington for the briefing before we left, and I go into this office and I see this huge dossier on the desk, which is my dossier, you know? And, you know, why am I here? This kept going through my head.
Are you going to let me out at the end of this, right?
And the interviewer, a sort of very kind of, you could tell that she was a long-time civil servant. You know, she'd been doing it for years. And what she did with this large dossier of mine, after we greeted each other, was to just push it to the side. And then we had the regular sort of normal kind of a conversation about what I would be doing. Why would they send Paul Marshall over to Europe, you see?
Did you ever get an answer to that question that satisfied you?
I came up with an answer that satisfied me. This would show that the United States tolerated and encouraged their dissidents. That is how liberal the society was. And so this is why the woman, you know, just let me know. She let me know that, yes, you're on file here, but we're still sending you because you serve our purpose.
So did you pull any punches in your own speaking on that European tour in 65?
Well, I mentioned it in passing.
No. I want to play a clip. This is Langston Hughes, and I'm going to ask you to reflect on what he says here and on him. Taking part in a panel discussion on the WNYC airwaves in 1957 called The Writer's Position in America. This was sponsored by the National Association of Authors. And listen to Langston Hughes, June 23rd, 1957.
My chance to be heard as a Negro writer is not so great as your chance. I once approached the play service of the Dramatists Guild as to the handling of some of my plays. No, was the answer. They would not know where to place plays about Negro life. I once sent one of my best-known short stories, before it came out in book form, to one of our oldest and most famous American magazines. The story was about racial violence in the South. It came back to me with a very brief, nice, courteous little note saying that the editor did not believe that his readers wished to read about such things.
Langston Hughes on a WNYC panel discussion, June 23rd, 1957, and thanks to WNYC archivist Andy Lancet for finding that audio for us. I don't know if you ever heard that.
No, no.
But it was right around the time you were writing Brown Girl, Brownstones.
Brownstones, yes.
Does his experience reflect your experience?
Essentially, yes, it does. But with mine, I think at that period, I was so involved in the process of learning how to write to bring off this first novel that I was not at that point as involved politically as he was for his entire life.
What else were you thinking as you were listening to that clip? You were listening very intently.
Yes, to his voice, that wonderful voice of his.
What did you learn from Langston Hughes, and how did you first meet him?
I first met, well, of course, I had known his work all along.
Of course.
Yes. And one of the things that struck me, The Big C, and I Wonder as I Wander, his two books about traveling, I came across in the library as a teenager, and I knew that he was the writer for me because this is exactly what I wanted to do. The Big C, meaning to travel, you know. I wonder as I wander. That struck me as just the most marvelous life that one could possibly have and also be a writer, you see. So he was someone that I admired from early on.
Triangular Road is the name of your memoir. What are the 3 points?
The 3 points are, in a sense, what defines me. I was born in Brooklyn, New York, USA. So that is very much there. My parents came from a tiny, tiny island in the Caribbean called Barbados. That's the second link. And then I was invited some years ago to visit Africa and saw, just as I was doing research for the trip, looking at maps, saw that Barbados was the first point, this little tiny island, was the first point for many of the slave ships coming from the Gold Coast. So there are the three points that define me.
How did it change you, having actually experienced Africa, a piece of it anyway, in person?
In person, it was, in a sense, coming home and feeling very comfortable there, but also feeling embraced. All of these people at the conference, it was a conference, a big conference held in Nigeria, in Lagos. All of these other scholars and writers from Africa and so on were coming over to tell me what part of my face belonged to them. The shape, yes, of the nose, the lips, the contour of the cheeks and so on.
As you write, that Africa represents, quote, the greater portion of my tripartite self.
Yes.
That I had yet to discover, yet to know.
And yet to know.
Do you keep going back?
No, what I'm going to be working on next is that further penetration into Africa to discover that self.
Where do you want to go?
I'm going to, I've touched base there once or twice. I'm going to start out in Kenya, then go down to, then to Uganda, and as further south as I can get.
And you write that the Atlantic is, mm-hmm, quote, an entire ocean permanently sitting Shiva.
Yes, sitting Shiva. When you walk along the Atlantic, you can hear a kind, and as it comes in, and a powerful waves, it's as if it's tearing itself apart. And you know, the whole ritual in Shiva is the Jewish ritual of mourning, where the women, you know, sort of tear their clothes and so on. As I walked, the first time I walked along the Atlantic in Barbados, I said, this sea is sitting Shiva for the tyranny that took place.
Do you think our country is starting to come to terms with the heritage of slavery in a meaningful way?
Well, I think there's emotions. Yes, I think so. But there is so much more by way of practical acknowledgement that it still needs to be done.
Paul Marshall will be reading tomorrow night, that's Tuesday night, March 10th, at 6 p.m. at the Hugh Mann Bookstore and Cafe, 2319 Frederick Douglass Boulevard at 125th Street. If you don't know it, what are you going to read?
I'm going to read the Langston Hughes chapter that opens the book. When he invited me, he made sure that the State Department included me on his tour of Europe.
All right, that's tomorrow night at Hugh Mann Frederick Douglass and 125th Street, a reading and book signing by Paul Marshall, her brand new memoir. You know her fiction, perhaps. Now she has written a memoir, Triangular Road. So nice to have you.
Thank you so much.
Megan Ryan, Lisa Allison, Jody Avergan, and Kate Hines produced this program. Annie Schreffler is our Uncommon Economics editor. And that was Jason Isaac at the audio controls today. I'm Brian Lehrer.